My guest today is New Yorker magazine cartoonist Roz Chaz. I've seen her speak here in Washington, D.C., and on May 13th, Chaz will appear in Reston, Virginia to discuss her graphic memoir, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? As an only child, Roz Chaz found herself as the sole caretaker for her parents, George and Elizabeth Chaz, when they reached old age. As she cared for her parents and following her father's death, it became clear Chaz wanted to and needed to tell their story.
I mean, I love to get rid of stuff. You know, I find it sort of, invigorating to sort of clean out a drawer and organize it and get rid of pens that don't work.
If you've never seen Roz Chaz but have seen her cartoons, you might imagine her to be one of the cartoons she so ably draws. Frizzy hair, frazzled demeanor, eyes crossed with exclamation points swirling around her head inside the cartoon bubble she's drawn for her clever one-liner response. But the real-life Roz Chaz is a lovely, generous, sincere, funny observer of life, which she depicts brilliantly in her cartoons.
Well, did you grow up with those little poems like use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without? Find a penny, pick it up, all the day you'll have good luck. You know, waste not, want not.
After talking with her for this interview for nearly an hour, even more appealing aspects of her personality are revealed. For one, she has many comic voices.
I'm amazed when these catalogs come into the house and they're ads, they're like, buy this new set of, you know, crappy dishes because it's going to be fall and you want a set of dishes that, you know, reflect the fall. And
as you'll hear in today's wonderful interview, many of Roz's impressions sound like she's poking fun at her very challenging upbringing as only child of quirky parents, when in reality, she's very nobly caring for her parents at a time when they truly needed her. Roz very much personalized our interview and conversation, asking me about me, my parents, my father's illness, and my own children. And unlike other interviewees who want to portray themselves, and oh, by the way, themselves, Roz genuinely cares about the connection, which likely deepens her understanding in creating her touching and hilarious cartoons.
It's funny, I'm occasionally asked, like, why did you include the photographs? And I think that there was this part of me that was like, I wanted to show it because if I describe it, people might think I was like exaggerating it to make it funnier, but no.
Roz Chast's cartoons exude warmth and whimsy, but often share more in common with the dark humor of cartoonists like Charles Adams or Gay and Wilson than they do with Peanuts. I mentioned that my own parents owned the Charles Adams book Monster Rally, which I loved, and apparently influenced Roz too. When she broke into a regular gig as cartoonist for the New Yorker magazine in the 1970s at age 23, she had already cultivated the eccentricities that became the hallmark of her work. As proof, an adult Chast drew a cartoon that shows a woman holding what is very clearly a war-torn oven mitt, saying to her mom, "Mom, what is it with this oven mitt? It's from year one. It's disgusting. It's all burnt and cruddy, and it's got patches on it. Oh my God, these patches come from a skirt I made 40 years ago in home ec." Directing her comments to her mother at the sink washing dishes, she says, "Please, let me buy you a new oven mitt." Without missing a beat, or in this case, a frame, her mom replies, "Why waste your money? That one still works." Chaz has illustrated more than 800 cartoons for The New Yorker, as well as a number of books. Her book, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?, is a New York Times bestseller and a National Book Award finalist, and is a sharply observed memoir of her parents at the ends of their lives. Welcome, Roz Chaz.
Welcome to the Not Old, Better podcast, a podcast dedicated to your future. The Not Old, Better podcast is all about revealing your future, offering clarity, health, happiness, and all things senior geek chic. And now your host, Paul Vogelzang.
Hello, everybody. We are here with Roz Chaz, who is the author of the wonderful book, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? Roz, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
How about your childhood? Did you have a difficult childhood in order to be so funny?
Maybe a tad. Yeah. Oh, the golden days of childhood, yes.
All of that pressure and trying to figure everything out. How old were you when you kind of first realized that you were funny?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think I'm being really serious and people will laugh. So I don't know. Maybe I haven't figured it out yet. You know, I think a lot of fellow cartoonists, when I've heard them interviewed, have talked about, you know, having a sort of dark childhood helps to have a sense of humor.
Yeah, I read that a lot of Kathy Geiswhite's humor and cartooning came from a period in her life when she was really facing some moments when she either recognized she needed to change or she was kind of being forced along that path to change.
I just don't know. I think I'm not that analytical and I'm just trying to hang on so as not to fall into the abyss.
I think there's something to be said sometimes for just kind of repressing and burying some things.
For repression? Oh, I'm a total believer in denial and repression. Absolutely. I don't know how you get through the day without it.
Yeah. As a cartoonist, you know, and certainly as a woman, I mean, there are many more, but when you first kind of started at the New Yorker, it seemed like it was kind of a male-dominated club almost.
Yeah, it was. It was.
How'd you kind of break through all that?
I never really thought about it that much. I figured I had so many other problems. Being female was one of them. I mean, my stuff was so different. I was so much younger and just, you know, I was a weirdo. So being female was just one of an entire constellation of things.
Yeah, you were 23 when you started it.
Yeah, 23.
That's a badge of honor in itself. You know, that's really kind of taking something on at an institution that is prestigious. And did you ever walk in there feeling daunted or overwhelmed?
You know, I think there's some really interesting things about being a young person when you're doing things like this. It's kind of like having children when you're, you know, 22 or 23. You kind of just do it. And because you're very young and you don't think that much about other things. I mean, when I was 23, I didn't think of, you know, I mean, I knew what the New Yorker was. My parents were longtime subscribers and stuff like that. But I actually had thought that I was going to wind up doing cartoons for the Village Voice. Mm-hmm. I was shocked, you know, that they bought anything from me. And for a long time, I just thought, in fact, still to this day, there's a part of me that just thinks that one day they're going to realize, you know, big mistake. This is, you know, an experiment, didn't work out, bye. You know, I think that certainly when I was first starting, I always thought, well, you know, that's the end of that. I sold a cartoon and they're going to realize this was a mistake and they won't buy anything else. That was how I approached it pretty much.
Yeah. And so kind of returning for just a second about the book, I think as anyone reads it, they go back and relive and consider and think about their own childhoods. And my father is being very stubborn in these kind of these final stages. He has end stage COPD and emphysema. And so he's really struggling with a lot of that. But yet he wants to go through what's called pulmonary physical therapy. And I've heard you say, and I think I read this, where you said your mom was almost hell bent on staying alive. And that just really resonated with me. And so much of what you say kind of resonates with others. And yet, you know, you look at it and it's still something related to the kind of their end of days.
Yeah. I sometimes think, how can we even imagine, you know, at this stage of our lives, what it's like to be them, you know? On the other hand, my mother, at the end of her life, she dealt with it the same way that she dealt with everything else in her life. You know, and my father, the same thing. He was still himself. He dealt with things the way he always sort of did.
Yeah, my dad is. So I spend a fair bit of time. I live on the East Coast. My parents live on the West Coast. So I spend a fair bit of time kind of traveling back and forth to, you know, just kind of step in and help my mom a little bit. And my dad still wants, even though he's having a hard time, and yet he feels like, you know, for him, men pay bills. You know, women don't. And he wants to kind of keep my mom almost still, you know, live that kind of era. And as I'm working with both of them, kind of helping them through some of this stuff, I'm sorting through all of their items, their things. I'm kind of helping them with their checking account, their money, their kind of their money spending. And my dad had overpaid the veterinarian by about $750.
Holy crap. So did you call the veterinarian?
I did. And thank goodness, you know, they were just so honest and they returned all the money, but they had tried to get a hold of my parents, but my parents don't answer the phone. And so the veterinarian was feeling very guilty for even having this money.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just all rooted in kind of their era of thinking. And I'm hoping that I can adapt and change as I get a little older myself. I do have two sisters.
Do either of them live close to your parents?
No, not really. We're scattered.
Yeah, that's where it gets, at least that's where it got for me kind of complicated, you know, because they were living in Brooklyn, and you would think Brooklyn and Connecticut are not that far apart, but as a sort of almost non-driver, I mean, I do local driving, but I didn't learn to drive till I was 38, and I'm not comfortable driving into the city. I did it once, and it was really horrible, really like beyond horrible, like almost unspeakable. So going out to Brooklyn was kind of a schlep. It was, you know, the train to Grand Central and then two subways out to my parents. And it took a long time. And then I would have to walk, you know, 8 blocks from the subway to my parents' apartment and then reverse it to go back. And so the trip to see my parents was at least 2 hours, you know, even though it was and all by public transportation. So I didn't feel like I could make the trip more than maybe once a week at best. And when they got kind of increasingly frail, I didn't feel like, even though I had somebody, you know, a person there during the day, which they hated, you know, helping take care of them, I did not feel comfortable with that. I didn't feel that they were managing that well on their own. And then at the end, you know, things started to happen that were really not good. You know, my mother kept falling and she wouldn't use her life alert pendant because she was afraid they were going to take her to the hospital. She had used it a few times and they threatened to take her to the hospital, or she saw this threatened and then she stopped using it. And my father would have to run around the building and look for somebody to help pick her up because he was too weak to get her up off the floor. You know, she was a lot bigger than him. It got kind of bad. Then he got kind of like turned around in the building, and it was clear at that point they were in their early 90s, and my mother was very frail. She had been in the hospital and she never really recovered her strength from that. You know, from a 3 week stay, 2.5 week stay, where she was, you know, kind of in bed, and you lose a lot of strength if you're not doing anything.
Yeah. And I think it's hard on both my mom and my dad. There's a lot of, you know.
Yeah, and it must be scary. It must be very scary. I mean, my parents got to the point where my mother was not leaving the apartment. You know, they never went out. They depended on neighbors bringing groceries. I would bring groceries, and they had Meals on Wheels. Mm. They were not going out and shopping. They weren't leaving the apartment. My father going down to get the mail in the lobby, in the mail room, was a big journey. And that is something that I think people who haven't really dealt with the extremely old, they don't necessarily understand that, you know, that it really does become very scary. I love to get rid of stuff. You know, I find it sort of very, I don't know, invigorating to sort of clean out a drawer and organize it and get rid of pens that don't work and, you know, erasers that are just a nub and they're dirty and you don't want them, or I guess they just did not get the same thrill out of that I do. Maybe they liked seeing the sort of overflow of stuff because they grew up so poor, you know?
Yeah, my father's mother emigrated to the United States from Holland, and they really, I think, went through a completely different era about some of this stuff and you know, kept stuff around because it was important, and saving things was something that, you know, they did. I remember my mom had some yeast starter from the San Francisco earthquake, she claimed, that from 1906, this sourdough bread yeast starter she kept in a container in her refrigerator. And my dad was, and my dad was always concerned about wasting water and
Yes, yes. Well, did you grow up with those little poems like use it up, wear it out, make a do or do without, find a penny, pick it up all the day, you'll have good luck. You know, waste not, want not. I mean, I grew up with all of these sort of anti-waste things. And in some ways, you know, when taken too far, I guess, you know, they become sort of almost pathological. You know, then you get things like, you know, the yeast starter from, you know, 1906. But on the other hand, I'm amazed when these catalogs come into the house and they're ads for, not ads, but they're like, buy this new set of, you know, crappy dishes because it's going to be fall and you want a set of dishes that, you know, reflect the fall. And, you know, just, I don't know, the Martha Stewart approach to life where nothing you have is really good enough and it can always be improved and cuted up. And, you know, your toothbrush should express who you are, you know, and this is really the opposite of how my parents grew up, where, you know, you didn't look to perfect, you didn't, you know, look around your house and try to make it like this little sort of, you know, you didn't obsess over it. I mean, they had their own issues with stuff, obviously, but you didn't obsess in that, like, Martha Stewart-ish sort of way.
Yeah, just stores like, for example, the Container Store. I mean, you know, with my dad's love of the Tux containers, I mean, he kind of was doing that.
That would be sort of nice if you kept all your, like, various sort of, instead of these, like, decorative, you know, like canisters for pasta. You just kind of kept them in different, like, tux containers.
You called it, the photographs in your book are wonderful, too. And there was one that I remember with kind of the various stages of tape on the cheese tainer.
Oh, God. I mean, that, it's funny. I'm occasionally asked, like, why did you include the photographs? And I think that there was this part of me that was like, I wanted to show it because if I described it, people might think I was like over, like exaggerating it to make it funnier, but no. And that cheese tainer was from when I was in junior high or maybe even before. So it was, as I said, it was from before they got really old, you know, so they were still leaving the house. They were still going out and shopping. So the idea that they continued to patch this plastic container, which, oh God, it's so crazy, you know?
Yeah, I hope that I won't do that, but I know my kids will start to see some of this, you know, behavior in me at some point. Mm-hmm. And I hope they have kind of a sense of humor. I think, you know, I know, you know, early that I'm a fan. And I think I've read that you've said that some of the only relief that you get from some of this stuff is, you know, the terror of being alive is to kind of tell jokes. And it seems like even the quote unquote death cartoons, which strike, I think, a lot of chords with people, they become funny and touching as you're doing them. And I hope that my kids are able to kind of look at it that way.
How old are your kids?
We have a 23-year-old son and a 17-year-old son.
So yours are just marginally younger than mine. Yeah, I think my kids get it. I mean, I've told them that, you know, I think that Nora Ephron's mother told her everything was copy. Mm-hmm. And I've told my kids everything is material. And it is. They can use this in any way they want because they're my kids, you know. So
with everything going on politically today and all of the, I suppose, the current events, do you ever get tempted to do some political cartooning? I mean, you know, your stuff about your parents is such a daily event kind of thing as opposed to kind of the current events. And so I think that's probably what makes it so special and unique. But I don't know. Does the current political environment ever capture your attention enough to want to do a cover for The New Yorker?
I think that there are people who are really good at that. You know, that's kind of their beat. That is their wheelhouse. They are obsessed with politics. They are very, very opinionated. They have very strong pro and con feelings, and that is what they think about. And that's what makes their cartoons good, you know, because they really do care about all of these things and they're very knowledgeable. And that's where their sense of humor comes out. And I think for me, you know, a couple of weeks ago, The New Yorker did a Trump cartoon issue, which was fun. I mean, I had a cartoon in there because, you know, doing cartoons about Trump, it's really not hard. All you have to do is, you know, do a sort of portrait of him without even trying. It's funny, you know, he has that orange balloon face, and you know, he's just a caricature of himself, I think, and he knows it, and then he plays it up and people love it, and that's, you know, what he's about. But in general, I'm not a political cartoonist. I think I'm more of a social observer type of cartoonist. I mean, the other problem with political cartoons is that they date, you know, and they date really fast. So if I did a cartoon, whatever, 15, 20 years ago about Bob Dole, I mean, who cares? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, let me state again for anyone who didn't kind of hear it at the start, the name of the book is Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by Roz Chast. And I know, Roz, it's going to be out in September in paperback. One of my favorite illustrations, I think, is The Wheel of Doom. the various kind of doom and gloom and grim reality and all of the insecurities and neuroses that are kind of, you know, touched on there. And so much of your memoir is touching and consoling to all of us who are kind of taking care of our aging parents. I wonder, as you start to travel, are you starting to hear from kind of the baby boomer generation that all of this is really clicking and making sense? And
I hear from a lot of different people. I mean, when I first started going around and talking about it, I realized, like, oh my God, I hope that, like, people who are older than our generation, you know, see it, don't see it as, like, my being disrespectful to my parents or something like that. But I've met many people who were in their 80s and 90s who are really, they love the book. They are happy that it's being talked about because these are problems. And we don't talk about these things in our society. We just sort of pretend that these things don't happen. And I think it's terrible. It's terrible. And I mean that from like a very selfish point of view, because I think, you know, once your parents die, you realize, you know, who's next in line. And I don't want to be shuffled off to a place where the only thing to do is watch some guy do magic tricks or the dinner theme is outer space. And I didn't make that stuff up. This is what these places are often like. And they have it piped in music. And that's if you're in a nice place. And my parents were in a very nice place. It was, you know, 10 minutes from me. But still, I don't want outer space themed dinner. I mean, that's just bizarre. And this was not for people who were senile. They were just people who were old, very, very old. So I hope it changes by the time we are up there, should we get up there.
Yeah, I hope it is.
Very selfish.
Well, I think with your writing, your humor, and your ability to really hone in on some of these issues, I think we are starting to talk a little more about it. Certainly in my own family, we're not, you know, sweeping under the carpet for me and my sisters. And the three of us, my two sisters and I, just love your books. And we try to listen to all of your interviews on NPR and everywhere else to hear what you've got to say about this, because it is kind of nice to look at it in a little bit different way when you're just so overwhelmed with some of the other emotions that you have to face these times.
Well, thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Roz. What a pleasure it's been to talk with you today. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, you too, Paul. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.